Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Strange Magic After Midnight, where our inspiration takes us to some very unexpected places. I'm your host this evening, Incoherent Dust, without my co-host Victoria Frost for tonight, but we do have the lovely Pam Ray stepping in. This show is brought to you by the Late Night Poets of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a member of the group or the website to enjoy the show or even call in and read a piece of your own, but if you like poetry, we highly recommend it. You know, shows almost every night of the week on a variety of different topics and themes, and there's something for everyone to enjoy. This evening, we bring to you a selection of poetry inspired by the lyrebird, a very beautiful bird with just an amazing range of mimicry and sound, and I can't wait to read these pieces with you guys. Hey, Pam, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm pretty sure it's actually pronounced lyrebird. In fact, I know it is because I had to go Google it and listen over and over again just to make sure. But, yeah, I really liked this prompt that Victoria picked out, and I liked the fact that people took it in different directions. Like, some wrote about the bird itself and some took it in a metaphorical direction. So I'm definitely looking forward to this show and, of course, hanging out with you, another cool poet. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I totally agree with you. It's always so interesting to see, you know, the variety of ways that people take a prompt and make it their own. It looks like we do have some people on the board. We first of all have area code 580. You're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
Hello, this is Mark.
Hey, Mark, welcome.
Hello.
So good to have you. And then we also have a Faziana. I want, if I could unmute her. Hey, Faze. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you.
All right. Well, Pam, I guess we better get the show on the road. So where are we going first?
All right. And let's see. Faziana, I don't see a right from you. You're here for helping with reading and commenting?
Yep, I'm just hanging out.
Awesome, awesome. All right, then we'll go ahead and we'll start with They Are Great Voices by Pink Fairy Five. And Faziana, would you give that a read for us, please?
They Are Great at Voices by Pink Fairy Five. I heard a distinct voice in the bowels of an Australian jungle. Clark Gabe, what? He's been gone a long time. I followed the voice, but alas, now I was hearing Elvis singing Love Me Tender. The guide had tried to stop me, but I was persistent. So he held the tour party back until I finally returned. Did you hear that? I asked. Did you hear that? Someone else asked in my voice. What is that? I asked the tour guide. That is a lyrebird, he told me. They are great at voices. I did not believe him until I heard, they are great at voices. Come out of the jungle in his exact voice. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Faze. Thank you. And Mark, can we start off with you for a comment?
Marcus?
Are you muted, Mark?
Yes.
Oh.
Did you hear that?
I heard
love
that.
This. I really
yeah.
did. Yeah. Beautiful film.
Thank you so much. And Pam, what about you?
Well, you know, Pink Fairy is so clever, and Faziana, you did an excellent read with this. I like the fact that, you know, it's wonderful storytelling that it's so good storytelling with detail that it makes you wonder, has she actually had this experience or not? And that's what makes a great story. And just very clever in the way that she uses confusion to create a humor within the write. So very well done.
I so agree with you. Great comment, Pam. I don't know. And I love that, you know, Pink Fairy 5 often enters our shows, and she always writes these great tributes. And it's cool because, you know, oftentimes we're highlighting a person, you know, and she will do so much research and, you know, really delve into who they were. But I love that even when it's, you know, about a bird, she has this this way of making it a tribute to the bird themselves and their talents. I think it's really cool that it's just, I always know I'm reading her poetry. And Faziana, what did you think?
I loved it. I think that it did feel real. Like, I believed that she had this experience. And that there's something really cool about, the, like, living it where you actually hear the bird and you're tempted out into the woods, well, the jungle, I guess, and want to see who it is and have the repetition there at the end making her realize that it actually is just a bird mocking them. or I mean, not mocking, but like repeating what they're saying. I thought that was really cool way of talking about the bird from the human perspective.
Comments all around, you guys. Thank you. And where are we going next, Pam?
All right. Up next is The Lyre's Concert by Angels World. And Marcus, give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Thank you, Pam. The Lyre's Concert by Angels World. A woodland cosmos world. The green wood, dazzling white alone, shone right in. Tall oaks looked up from the sky. River streams were bent into the tide. Tweet, cold air, glided feathers, merry symphony, aurora, blue chromatic treasure. Nature's children gather to devote fish amidst ripples high under the lamp. The lyre lures. The lyre lures from notes of centuries long ago. I lost my glasses. Sorry. Big and small gather to hear its golden glow. Tall, quilled, dainty claws. Big audience. Big voice to follow. The lyre. A boundless grand court.
Great read, Mark. Thank you. Or Marcus, excuse me. Great read, Marcus. Thank you. This is such a beautiful poem. I think that she really has a gift for imagery. And I think my favorite part was the fish amidst ripples hide under magnifying boats. I don't know. For me, it just, like, the whole scene with the fish darting under the boat. I thought it was really, really lovely, the way that she put the entire scene into this golden glow. And what about you, Pam? What did you think?
These are beautifully written couplets, and I like the way she stays consistent with those. A woodland cosmos world hidden. I thought that was a great opening line, just because, you know, there is so much to a forest, and not just the big thing with trees, but the small things, you know, the microscopic things and everything in between. I also like nature's children gathered to devote fish and in this ripples hide under magnifying boats. There's such a connection between humanity and nature that is kind of observed observed and respected within this poem and within those lines that I truly appreciate, and it's very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And what about you, Faith?
I really enjoyed it. I especially liked the line, "The lyre lures from notes of centuries long ago," because lyre is also an instrument from, like, medieval times. And I'm sure it was named after the bird or vice versa. Like, there's got to be some connection because it has that beautiful sound is kind of, I would see that as a golden glow. I have a friend who plays it, and it's so beautiful. She played me Happy Birthday on it once, and it was just, like, the most special song, the way that she did it. I like that connection there as it being centuries long ago. And it's sort of like the birds have those connections, like maybe they kind of repeat things from their life that their next generation hears and repeat what their parents did, and it's like they end up having kind of old school songs in their head and keep it alive longer than us humans who kind of move on to the next thing.
Oh, great comment. Thanks, Ephesiana. Okay, and Mark had to step away for a little bit. So, Pam, where are we headed to next?
All right. I am going to go ahead and put up on Black Days by Babbler. And Mika, would you give that a refresh, please?
I would be honored to. Okay. On Black Days by Babbler. Today I dress in all black with studded jewelry and lipstick in deep plum. It makes my teeth look yellow, and there's something vicious about that. I lace my boots up to mid-shin. Any taller and I feel oversexed. The boots are black, too. Under the boots is a pair of old fishnets that have holes in them. Once they were perfect, but I'm not perfect, so I picked holes into the calves and thighs. Wouldn't be good for fishing, but they do all right catching eyes. Once the ensemble is complete, I review myself in the mirror, a multitude of black, deep black, faded black, new black, shiny black, and my pale, pale skin, my lips the dark tone of a Victorian rose. This is today, a black day, a day for death, for little hope and strong armor, for spreading ashes, coffins and somber dirges, when graves are made for masses and the playgrounds are empty. Tomorrow I pray for rainbows. End poem. I don't know. Babbler, you continue to astound with your intense poetry. Afasiana, would you go first on this one?
Well, I think she mixes, like, beautiful imagery with the serious subject. I mean, you're right about the intense. That last stanza is very intense. And I think it really builds up to that point and is done with such skill. First of all, I think I like this outfit. it sounds like something I would have wore, like, maybe, like, 15 years ago, especially the deep plum lipstick. Man, I need to, like, have a makeover and go back to my all-black days. I think this is really interesting, the way that she portrays it. I especially like the part where she says, once they're perfect, but I'm not perfect, so I pick holes into the calves and thighs, like recognizing like her own imperfections, needing her appearance to reflect that, and making the connection of like, wouldn't be good for fishing, but they do all right catching eyes. Catching eyes is really smart there. She's very clever, and there's always like this punch of meaning after the beauty, and I think that that's really an amazing skill.
Great comment. And Pam, what about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful take on the prompt. It's creative, it's metaphorical, as mentioned, it's raw and gritty, beautifully written, and how it's about a serious subject. But what I like is how she captures the whole idea of how much of ritual and showing off there is within the mating courtship of the lyrebird, and then turns it into how we humans do the same things in our own ways. We wear that clothing that we know is going to attract attention. What I like here is we have somebody who's still trying to attract attention. And yet, you know, they've gotten to the point where, you know, they feel sexy in the black, and yet there's something they almost feel like is missing, that maybe, just maybe, eventually the rainbows will be there. And there's a certain, like, that sense of hope within those ending lines. And excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, great observation with the rainbows in the end, Pam. I so agree with you, and I really liked the way that line at the end was paired with the stanza just before it. This is today, a black day, a day for death, for little hope and strong armor, for spreading ashes, coffins and somber dirges, when graves are made for masses and the playgrounds are empty. I thought when graves are made for masses and the playgrounds are empty, it was really interesting because so far throughout the poem, it seems to be such a personal experience. And then in that stanza, it becomes almost a little broader because all the playgrounds are empty. It's like it isn't just the one person's experience, but no one is feeling joy. And I kind of had two thoughts with that. I thought it could be like a national tragedy or like an international tragedy. But also I felt like just the playgrounds image itself could be a call to like the collective loss of innocence, like how everyone in the world eventually comes of age and experiences this lack of a day. And how we all as humans kind of share that experience of the playground of your memory, the joyful kind of naivete or innocence that you had ending. I thought it was really beautiful.
I like how you mentioned the shared experience that humanity has. Very cool there.
Thank you, Pam. And all right, where are we headed next?
All right, up next is Lyrebird Song by Sky Poet 40. And it goes like this. Creating their own dynasty, passing along their own myth with specific songs, lyrebirds, natural mimickers from Australia's flute dialect, whistling, they're musically broadcasting almost any clear, loud sound, trains, alarms, other birds and animals singing tunes as if they mocked and copied a fire siren, loggers running from a fire that was not there. They have a shy and elusive nature, crazy and absurd, now becoming prey to feral cats, foxes, and the hunters, wanting the male lyre bird's long, elaborate tail, looking like a lyre and lyre, and their unique plumes of neutral color, unveiling exotic tail feathers, a precious treasure heirloom of hunters, losing a threat to the Australian winters, June and July. Today, the landscape remains protected as the males are singing their own song, wooing a female lyrebird with a phantom alarm, mimicking the sound of a flock of birds, warning dangers nearby, deciphering the mysterious superb lyrebird, elusive acoustic illusion with this false alarm saying, honey, the world's a perilous place. Stay with me. I'll comfort you under my wings, protecting you from harm. She replied, you had me with the first song, dancing beneath the moonlight, singing Neomore. Tonight, take this feather as a sign of my tender voice's cadenza, binding us together forever. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And beautiful poet Sky, or a poem, Sky Poet 40. This is cool. I really like that at first it started with this kind of similar to a tribute poem, you know, kind of talking about the nature of the lyrebird. And then as it went on, it became more of almost like a love story with the lyrebirds. And they're dancing beneath the moonlight singing. I thought that was really beautiful. And what did you think of Aziana?
I think it's really cool that they know how to get rid of the humans, you know, make the fire siren so the people run away. That's a good defense mechanism to pay attention to what their predators are afraid of. That's really cool.
Absolutely, I agree. And what about you, Pam?
Yeah, I like this. I thought it was creative. I have to agree with what Babler said. She says that descriptive and informative in a story of two birds. It almost reads as if it is two separate rites, as if it's that piece of information, like you're watching a nature special, and you know, you're learning, which is really cool because, you know, for anybody tuning into the show who doesn't know about the lyrebird, and they listen to this poem or they read this poem, they're going to get an education, and it's beautifully written. And then there's kind of like almost like a mythological type feel in the last couple of stanzas, where it gives a personification to the two birds. And that line you had me at the first song was just a wonderful tidbit of humor added in there. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And we do have Marcus back on with us. Marcus, did you get a chance to read that poem?
You had me at hello. I love this poem. I really do.
Me too.
Did you hear me?
We heard you this time. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt.
I'm sorry. I broke my glasses earlier.
You're fine. You're fine. No, just sometimes when people pause, I want to make sure they're not just pausing to, like, gather their thoughts, so I don't want to just, like, jump in too quickly. That was my bad. But okay, Pam, where are we going next?
Up next is Trickster Mimic by Darkened Auras. And Afasiana, will you give that a read for us, please?
Trickster Mimic by Darkened Auras. Dripping raindrops fill my head, lightsaber fight next to my bed, bulldozer destroying my house, calls of the dog, the cat, the mouse, camera whines within the night, but never any burst of light, screeching monkeys in the dark, pew pew, did laser hit its mark? Hear that tree? It's falling fast, timber, I shout, awake at last, but don't worry, rest assured. It's just mimics of my lyrebird. End poem.
Great read, Afasiana. This is cool that it's got kind of that humor to it. It's paying homage to the bird and the way that it's such a talented mimic, but it's done in such a funny way. It almost reminds me of, like, something Dr. Seuss would write. What did you think, Marcus?
My God, I was just thinking that. Dr. Seuss, that is so weird. Are you reading my mind?
apparently.
Yeah.
I'm a psychic all of a sudden.
The second top stanza, bulldozer destroying my house, calls the dog, the cat, the mouse. I mean, that is so Dr. Seuss, but on a more somber note, you know, man destroys. I see this every day. I ride a lot into the wilderness, and I see this stuff, you know, the chirp, chirp, and the birds, and I'm telling you, this poem, Kimber, I love this poem, very powerful, very, very powerful.
Great comment, Marcus, thank you. And how about you, Faith?
Well, I'm a nerd, so I really liked that it had, like, the lightsaber reference and the pew, pew. It's just interesting mixed in with all the nature sounds. So it's like this bird kind of bridges the different worlds by picking up human noise and animal noises. And it would be alarming to hear, I think, that mix of sounds. But it's really interesting, and I like that the picture was included. I actually don't really know much about this bird, and I just think it's beautiful and interesting.
Absolutely. Great comment, Afasiana. And, okay.
I really enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. I like the picture that she went with. And I did like the use of the pew-pew and the timber. That really just, it makes you smile. And, I like that Darkened Aura did something a little different. Like, I'm so used to seeing her beautiful dark poetry that, you know, it's nice to see her having some fun with sound and with imagery. And then I like how really it's only a few short lines and yet we get bombarded with so many different sounds and then that fun little comfort at the end of, don't worry, it's just my lyrebird. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And we do have some new callers to bring on. So first of all, area code 423, you're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
Whom do you think?
Oh, Rex, it's been
welcome.
So long. I forgot your area code. Hola.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I thought you were going to give me an evil laugh, but that's all right. I missed you. There it is. Oh, and we also have area code 912. Area code 912, you're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
My name is Kenneth Jenkins. Hi.
Hi, and I'm sorry, what was your name?
Kenneth Jenkins.
Ken.
Caleb?
Kenneth Jenkins.
Okay, well, welcome. It's good to have you. And did you have a poem that you were wanting to read, or are you just here to enjoy the show?
Well, I do have one.
Okay. And are you a member of Late Night Poets?
No. Just as a matter of fact,
okay.
I think it's my first time.
Why don't we go ahead and continue on with the show? I'll put up the next poem to be read, and you can take this gentleman here into the green room and help him out.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. And so with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and grab the next poem, put it on the board. Marcus, did you get your glasses fixed?
Yes.
All right. Then I have put up Love's Liar Bird by Shady Bunch, and please give that a read for us.
Yes, ma'am. This is by Shady Bird. Love's Liar Bird. I found my forever in the arms of stainless woman. She likes your jazz as smooth as our favorite whiskey. Paint our being with the same brushes. Her beauty is effortless and her words are few. I know she is my friend. I locked away my own passion. Never would have cared. I am a mirror protruding towards them. I mimic his song to feed my need to be whole. If I had to cut this mirror from my belly, he would see me for who I am. Outstanding poem, by the way. Grace Beautiful.
Great read, Marcus. Thank you very much. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, it's two pieces. First one is obviously him and the second one her, but I like the thought they offered up in the first. Stainless woman, she likes her jazz as smooth as whiskey. But that last line, when I hold her hand, I know she's my possession. There's obvious note of ownership thought. And then and the second one, it bites him in the angle that she wears his angle of thought as opposed to donning her own passions. She hides it. And the thought of that mirror protruding from a woman's torso, reflecting his own sense of self-love for himself, feeds into what she is at the bottom, a woman desperate to feel wanted. And you walk in that lonely highway, you're going to forever find yourself in the arms of something less than what you want to begin with.
I like that. Very well said. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with Babbler, who said in the chat that the last line of the first stanza bothered her. You know, my back kind of went up at, like, my possession. but then that you get the other perspective, and that made it work for me, and I felt like it got much deeper into it. I really liked that it recognized that she was kind of like trying to fit in. I mimic his song to feed my need to be held, and the idea that she is his mirror just so she can fit in, I mean, it's devastating still to me, and an unhealthy relationship, but I think that this is very reflective and interesting and fits with the prompt of this bird that mimics. You know, mimicking for the sake of finding love and being acknowledged. And the line, if I were to cut the mirror from my belly, he would see me for who I am, is just, like, really intense. And this is just very creative way of expressing these feelings and a very personal and insightful response to the prompt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And Marcus, your thoughts?
Beautiful bird. It's all I can pretty much say on this. I mean, it's oh my gosh, it's a perfect mirror. Hold up. My gosh, just a second. Hold up. There's one line on this. I can't even pull it up. Anyways, yes, it was a good poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have to agree, this it's beautiful and it's emotive. I like how it has, it was mentioned that it's broken into two parts, where he says, her beauty is effortless and her words are few. When I hold her hand, I know she's my possession, was a really kind of spine-chilling part. And it really was intriguing to have it that way because of the fact that it just didn't seem to fit in with the other four lines in the stanza. And then where it says, I am a mirror protruding from a woman's torso, I thought that was just absolutely an intriguing line. And you can just feel the intensity and the desperation to try to fit into other people's standards. So just an excellent write and very well done. And Mika, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. And good night, Marcus. It looks like Marcus has to go for the evening. It was great having you for your comments, and thank you for reading as well. You know, this is a really cool poem. I wish I had been there for the read because this is such a cool poem, but I think I have to echo what Faziana said about how intense it was to talk about if you were to cut the mirror out. That was just very, wow. I mean, I don't know. I think sometimes some people have just such a unique way of putting something that experience almost like of Echo and Narcissus, of him loving the reflection that he sees instead of the real person behind it is very, very striking. And also I like the contrast between that stanza with the kind of the Narcissus and Echo vibe with the beginning, which seems so herself, you know, in embracing of the things that she loves, and I almost feel like the stainless woman is herself within, is the self behind the mirror.
I like that, and I think you're right. It does kind of have that feel of someone, you know, seeing themselves in the mirror, and the way the mirror kind of just brings forth all your discomfort with yourself. So, wonderful observation there.
Thank you. And where are we going next?
All right. Now, Rex, I know you have a right on the board, but I have to step away for a few minutes, and I'm not going to miss you reading your right. So I'm going to have you read now Lyrebird by Karina May.
Rex, are you there?
Rex?
Hello, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm supposed to read this one? Aha.
Yes.
Okay. Lyrebird by Karina May. A feather of a whisper, men chattering in a hush. Auditory stimulants, if that's not enough. It's on the tip of my tongue, I allude to the lyrebird, for volcanic eruptions on classic deforest. If this is a silly game and my mind is of essence, a joker whistles the play, truly mystery and poem.
Great read, Rex. Excellent job. And Afiziana, will you start us off on this one?
I like this. It has an interesting way of wording things. Auditory stimulants for volcanic eruptions aren't classic to the forest. It's kind of like you recognize that it's this bird because things are a bit out of place for where you're hearing them. And I really enjoy the way that it plays with that. A joker whistles to play, truly mystery. Like the bird is playing with us. It's not just blindly repeating things. It's being manipulative. And we saw that in some of the other poems, like when it was making the fire alarm sound and things like that. I like that Karina played up this kind of playfulness and mischievousness of the bird.
Oh, I like that take. Yeah, I was kind of at a loss at the beginning, a feather whisper, men chattering in a hush, auditory stimulants, if that's not enough. And I like the way that you interpreted that. I kind of lost my train of thought right now. Don't mind me. I'm having an off night, guys. I'm sorry. Rex, could you comment on this one, even though you read it so beautifully?
Sure. I like the top line. A feather of a whisper. It offers up that thought to the lyrebird, but it talks to the hushness, which comes in the next sentence. Men chattering in a hush, auditory stimulants, if that's not enough. It alludes to a group of men maybe playing around a poker table or a card game or any of a number of scenarios that you can roll on. And it's on the tip of my tongue, I allude to the lyrebird. And then there's that thought of noting for volcanic eruptions on classic forest. It's that note that jubilance or anger or any thought to emotional outbursts aren't classic to just the forest itself. You can hear those monkey howls, the wolves, and all that crap that goes along with that scenario. And the joker whistles the play. That kind of hits on the note, my thought, with maybe the card game to begin with. So the mystery, what is going on? What are the men chattering about? Why in hushed tones? And why is one paying attention enough to listen?
Ooh, great comment, Rex. I forgot how much I missed Rex's comment. And Pam, what did you think?
I really liked this one. It was a wonderful brevity. Men chattering in a hush, auditory stimulant. I liked that because it just kind of reminds me of the whole idea of when you're sitting in a crowd, like a crowded cafe or somewhere, where all the voices start to blend together, and it's the, you know, like the whole idea of nobody has their own identity, like being in a beehive, and for volcanic eruptions aren't classic. I thought was a nice tribute to the different sounds that the lyrebird makes and how they can, make sounds that they've heard only once and bring it to an area where it's not common. a Joker's whistles to play truly mystery. I liked that she ended on truly mystery, because this is one of those poems that could have gone on longer, but I think by ending on those words, she allows the reader to fill in the rest in their own mind. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Thank you. And what would you like to read next?
All right. Well, up next we have, hold on, let me get that. And we have No Pages by Nuri Kolakoglu. Sorry, that was horrible pronunciation, I'm sure. But Afasiana, would you give that a read for us, please?
No Pages by Nuri Kolakoglu. I may not fly high like eagles. I don't eat carcass like vultures. They know the canary, but not me. I am special, and let them not call me. To me, being canary is a piece of cake. Those who see me sing know that I am not fake. I am like 10 birds combined in a body. Do you know any other? I know nobody. I can speak like you humans do. I tell stories and sing songs, too. I may look weird, but take a look at you. Are you special? You don't have a clue. I am free in the forest. I hear you humans like cages. I am free as a bird for ages. Once I am in them, I have no pages. End poem.
Ooh, great read, Afasiana, and what a cool piece. I am free in the forest. I hear you humans like cages. I like that. There's a sense of kind of pride that's being expressed there, and it doesn't matter if the bird mimics. Those who see me sing know that I am not fake. what?
I think there's some echoing or something.
Oh, no, I think Kenneth interjected. I just didn't hear what he said. Okay, well, so I just like that there's this sense of pride and of joy. I think that almost when you listen to the birds' calls, I think this kind of captured that feeling of, to me, kind of, like a swelling of the chest and pride, that kind of the sound evoked for me when I listened to it.
The sound, mind, and body.
Yeah. And what did you think, Rex?
I think there's a touch of sarcasm and sardonic humor in this, but it finishes off with a noted touch of sadness in the last couple of lines because I am free as a bird for ages. Once I am in them, I have no pages. There's that noted thought to I may no longer sing or mimic once more in the cage as opposed to being in the freedom of my normal environs. It does like to make fun of being a canary is a piece of cake. I thought that was a noted touch to humor. And then the thought to I can speak like humans do. I tell stories, sing songs too. I may look weird, but take a look at you. Are you special? You don't have a clue, so there's a touch of sarcasm in that as well.
Yeah, I like that. Good call on sarcasm, Rex. And what about you, Pam?
Yeah, I really like what Rex had to say. I thought this was a clever write. I'm particularly fond of the line, to me, being a canary is a piece of cake. Those who see me sing know that I'm not fake. I like the whole idea of I am what you see. I am what you hear. I don't imitate anything or anyone else. I like how it has the personification of this little bird, and where it says, in the end, where it says, I am free in the forest. I hear you humans like cages. I am free as a bird for ages. Once I am in them, I have no pages. The whole idea of, like, I have no pages kind of speaks to me of being, like, the you know, that idea of being an open book, of life being whatever you want to make of it. And I think cages works well because it can be a reality, you know, very literally taken, you know, that we like to put animals in cages or anything with it. But it also can be those metaphorical cages, those boundaries that we put on ourselves and our own thinking. So excellent comments, everybody, and excellent light.
Oh, beautiful insights, Pam. And Ephesiana, what about you? Did I call on you already? I don't know if I did.
No, I read it, but I don't think I commented.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. The same parts that other people were pointing out, just the way that it's it kind of pokes fun at humans. I may look weird, but take a look at you. Are you special? You don't have a clue. I wonder how many animals actually feel that way about us. They're like, look at those humans. They think they're in charge. it's just like I like that it mocks the humans, that it talks about us as putting ourselves in cages. Partly, I think, because we choose to live indoors and, you know, work in cubicles and things like that. But like Rex said, it's also like we metaphorically cage ourselves you know, giving ourselves rules that we have to follow or things like that, that the animals just sort of have their freedom to do what they want. And I actually don't know if these particular birds live in, like, communities, or if they're individual, like, just go off on their own. But
they
I feel like
individual, except for during mating season. Yep.
That makes sense with this. That it seems like they're like, why do you trap yourself in society? You can just go off and be free. I really like the way that acknowledges that. So thank you, Pam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great comment, Ephesiana. And we do have area code 770 on the air with us. And who are we speaking
it's
to, area code 770?
Huh? It's me, Fenlon.
Hey, Fenlon.
Hey.
Beep, beep.
Hey, I'm driving the ambulance, so we're taking somebody to the hospital, so I'm going to listen right now until I get there. We're going to be there about two or three minutes.
Okay. Well, welcome. All
thank
right.
You.
And Pam. And Pam, where are we going next?
All right. So, Kenneth, I hear you have a poem that you'd like to read for us about walking in another person's shoes.
Yeah.
So, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. The name of it is called Sunday Shoes. It was inspired by my wife, Vanessa. Can you walk a mile in my Sunday shoes? Go to places I've been long and wide, or some places you'll be, or places you'll pay your dues. Can you wear my Sunday shoes? That dance in God's praises, cutting a step or two, head reared back and voices raised high, those old, dusty Sunday shoes. I walk places far as well. I walk places far as well near and back again to anywhere. To any place I want to go from here, and then again to marches long for freedom cry, to church on dusty country road, to the fields where cotton grow high, in my old dusty Sunday shoes. Can you just walk in those old dusty shoes? Being full of, or either friend in those old dusty shoes. If I have to walk to hell and back, I would in these dusty old shoes, but I only walk to church in them. In fact, these old, dusty Sunday shoes, I'll keep walking in them until the good master calls me home, hoping someone will someday fill these old, dusty Sunday shoes. End the poem.
Great read, Kenneth. I'm really glad that you called to share that piece with us. I think it's interesting that you chose for the shoes to be Sunday shoes. But then, you know, as the poem wore on, they were old and dusty. I think there's a lot of significance that I'm reading into that, where, you know, your Sunday shoes are to be your best shoes. But if you continue to put your best self forward and you continue to walk the high road, as it were, or you know, choose to be the best that you can be, those shoes can become old and dusty. They can become almost worn out. It can be tiring to put your best foot forward all the time like that, and to and try to walk the high road. Even through that all, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of perseverance in your poem to doing it. I thought it was really, really nice and well written.
Thank you.
And what about you, Rex? What did you think?
I'm going to walk the same line you did. The Sunday shoes for the title, and then the walk and the slow rendition with the shoes from a kind of an almost new look through the ages to that dusty look. There is that that noted sort of you haven't walked a mile in my shoes, so to speak. They may be dusty, but they're still my Sunday shoes, and I only wear them one day a week, and that's because of that long walk, that trek in that direction. And you hold true to that right down to the end, where you call on the thought that I'll wear these old dusty shoes until the master calls me home.
Cool comment, Rex. And what about you? And what about you, Faze? What did you get from it?
I liked it, and I really liked your interpretation, Mika. I think that the repetition in the poem also goes for that, because it kind of like shows that it is a long walk, and it is tiring, whether it's a real walk or a metaphorical walk of having to go through so much, just trying to do what's right. So I think the walking to church seems like it's symbolic of like trying to get to the right thing, putting yourself out there and saving the best of you for that, your Sunday shoes. But they're dusty because, you know, life is not perfect, and sometimes your Sunday shoes are dusty. I think the repetition of dusty was really important and well done.
Thank you.
Great comment, Fidiana. And what about you, Pam?
I really enjoyed listening to you read that. Your reading voice has a nice pace and tone. I did like the repetitiveness of the old dusty Sunday shoes, and I really liked everybody's comments. This had a nice sense of old-fashioned spirituality to it, and the idea that the Bible that gets the most worn out is, or the book, you know, that gets the most worn out is the one that you read over and over again, and the shoes that get the most worn out are the ones that you walk over and over again, and the walking those difficult roads, we do it because we know that an example is being set. And that's, like you said in the end of your poem, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but there was that whole idea of that, whether it's actual children and grandchildren or, you know, just society in general, there's always people that you're setting an example for. And when you go on to the next life, you know you have done your best to put that example in place. And I like that this takes us back to a time that seems to be slowly fading away. So beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you.
I can comment.
Oh, Fallon, we would love you to comment.
Yeah, what I gathered from this poem, it was something that was back, someone that was probably a slave, and that they didn't have shoes but for Sunday, and that during the week, he was talking about the cotton fields highs because he went there barefooted, and he saved those shoes for that one day of decency, that is to give praise to God, and that that's even, you don't walk a mile in my shoes, it's because that's the only day he gets to wear them, he's just giving thanks for what he does have and just letting them know that he'll wear them to the master calls him back home, and that's the only day that he gets to himself is on Sunday. So, I think this is a great poem. I think it's great for the times that we're going through and just a reminder of how free we are and that we should never take it for granted. So, excellent, excellent rendition of that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great comment, Fallon, and great comment to Pam and everybody. And thank you for being here to read that, Kenneth. We really appreciate you coming on.
Okay. What day are you all going to be on?
This show is every Thursday morning, 12:30 a.m. to 2:30 a.m. And you're so welcome to call on again.
Okay. 12 to 2?
12:30 a.m. to 2:30 a.m.
Okay, 12:30 a.m. to 2:30 a.m. Okay. All right. Thank you for allowing me to read.
Thank you for being here to read. We appreciate you. Have a great night, Kenneth.
Good night, Kenneth.
You too. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, Kenneth.
All right. And where are we going next, Pam?
All right, Rex. Your poem is up. Go ahead. Give it a read.
All right. Beer-backing bohemian brothel blasphemers. Sounds of taps smoking, dripped in opium blues, my empty ribbon cleansed of manic diuretics, now spooled in toothless cobra venom. Just one more bourbon chasing a flat tire into a bicycle sprocket ride past midnight where tarantulas webbed the voice bled in mountains of regretted feckin' diarrhea. James knew that robust brouhaha well, script flavoring, salting, horny arse, bum mutational xylophonics. Such music in dry squeaks and wet fromage aerosols. That bushmaster sat on bearded tonality, joyfully. Give me one figure, tapping a hollow glass, the drooling bottle of mottled trauma. A single finger letting me bleed that evil eye, drunk under the table, panting, partying skunk, telling you, I know nothing of poetic politics, but I know the tang and pooning wet harmonics. Have you ever been to Fargo, deep in its own winter? Where farts transom freezes mid-plume while you piss ice cubes into a thrown tumbler of blue-balled morning, knocking knees as sun crows your cock's death rattle? Well, the liar is on you, plucking string neuroticism, teasing your dick and wetting those camel-toe dianetics, kept front and center. An illusion drawn across the backs of someone else's dues in your Dunning and Kruger hopscotch. And Paul.
Oh, my God, Rex.
I'm sorry.
in a good way. I should have said, holy shit, Rex, giving you a holy shit this time. Wow. I don't know how to comment on this poem without reading it a couple more times. Also, I guess the first thing I got to say is I love the references to Joyce and Joyce's love letters, I think. And the stanza that absolutely no one in the world could ever write other than you. A flavoring, salting, horny arse, bum mutational xylophonics, such music and dry squeaks and wet fromage aerosols. I love that. And you bring in the tonality joyfully to make sure that the reference hit home. Oh my God, I gotta read it again before I comment any further. And Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
I see it. I figured it was either James Joyce or James and the Giant Peach, but I figured if Rex was going to write about a giant peach, it'd probably become something dirty. So I went with James Joyce. Although given the rest of this poem, one never knows. But, oh my gosh, I feel like this whole poem just tears apart those people who have a stick up their ass and judges everybody else and makes all kinds of noise, but never really truly says something important. I do like, have you ever been to Fargo deep in its own winter where a fart's transom freezes mid-plume while you piss ice cubes? That's some wonderful humor there. And it takes me back to, remember when they had that a whole challenge thing where people were throwing hot water on cold, really cold days, saying that it would freeze in midair, only it didn't, and the idiots kept getting burned? Which probably isn't something you should laugh at, but, you know, if you're going to be that stupid, well, you know, and wonderful play on words here. Well, the leers on you plucking string neurotism, teasing your dick and wetting those camel toe Dianetics kept front and center. You know, everything put on display and such wonderful use of vulgarity. I mean, I think you're one of the few people who can use such, well, vulgar, for lack of a better word, language in a beautiful way and to make a point that, you know, basically where there's people out there who really, honestly, they're just blowhards. So excellent right there, Rex, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
You're welcome.
That was an excellent comment, Pam. And Ephesiana, what about you?
I'm a little bit speechless. This is a hard one to comment on. There's so much to it, and I feel like there are lots of, like, naughty double entendres that it's going to take a couple of reads to totally get. But I liked when you said, well, the liars on you plucked strings, neuroticism. I don't know, that amused me, the plucking the strings because of the instrument with the same name. I thought that was clever.
Thank you, Faisy.
Yeah, there's so much of that. Like I almost feel like every other word has two meanings. I don't know how you pack so much punch into every poem that you write. But yeah, I definitely agree with you, Faisiana. And what about you, Fallon?
Wow. This is a lot to digest. Because I mean, you want to make sure that you catch everything that you're trying to say, but to me, what really stuck out was, where did it go? Well, the liars, I guess the same thing. I mean, it's all just, I'm going to have to read it a couple more times, but it really struck me in awe because I wasn't expecting the end of how it ended or whatever. But, wow, great job, especially the trickery on words is impeccable. Out there, just up there.
Thanks, Val.
You're welcome.
And the Dunning-Kruger effect is the way that everyone thinks that they're above average, but that's impossible because technically the majority of people would be around the average. Right, Rex?
Yeah, the literal sense of it is a person who has immense confidence in a single arena, yet he takes that confidence and rolls it into every other arena past that which he has no knowledge of, and speaks as though he doesn't have that knowledge.
Ooh. You know what? I would never want to be one of the subjects of your poem, Rex.
For all we know, we all have been the subject of his poem at one time or another.
We don't know it.
How would you defend yourself against it?
I'm literal when I go that round.
Yeah, like that time he wrote that poem titled "Pam, You're a Bitch." I'm just kidding.
Now that you said that, I think he probably should write a poem titled "Pam, You're a Bitch" just to show us he could.
It should be a collaboration done by all of you.
Ooh. Can Ephesiana put it
for
to
your
like
birthday, Pam? We'll give you a roast.
All right, sounds fun.
Damn.
Okay, so I do want to mention before we go on to the next poem that we actually only have 4 rights left. So when it's not your turn to comment, and still make sure you're paying attention to the reads. Grab something, and this is for every one of you. Put it on the board.
Okay.
All right. Very cool. And now I paced away too far, so I have to get back to my Kindle Fire. And this is what happens when I walk and talk. And I just put up the next poem, which will be yours, Felon. So go ahead,
cool.
Give it a read for us.
And before I get another call, my partner's sitting patient in there, so we can walk. So thank God we marked him in there. Anyway, this is called Mimicking. Bellowing deep from my lungs are the sounds that mimic a world crashing. Chaotic thunder vibrates numbness, projecting melody, being tone deaf. Fault lines course along my cerebral settling amongst its quartets. Shelters layered and lay scattered from friend to foe. Laughter captured within happiness I seek to absorb. Resolve settle painting acceptance to echoes of right now. Mimicking expectations others' voice. Creating bass within me is the sound quicker than the speed of light. Casting me amongst the shadows, maybe even falling into the abyss. Am I the one who speaks what was once said? No, I'm the words that mimic what I've already bled. End poem.
Oh, man. Beautiful read, Felon, and beautiful write.
Thank you.
Sometimes I'm so off base with how I interpret your poems, but I really got something, especially from the first stanza. I really got bellowing deep from my lungs are sounds that mimic a world crashing, chaotic thunder vibrates, numbness projecting, melody being tone deaf. I really felt like that to me was saying so much about kind of the nurture over nature response to the world and how what people put on you and your environment, what your environment does to you. Of course you mimic, of course that's the sound that you make is in answer to the pain that you're forced to endure from outside yourself you know, the chaos, as you put it, the world crashing. And then, you know, later on when you say mimicking expectations, others' voice, that is so true that there's such a thing as self-fulfilling prophecy, but also what others treat you as. Or expect from you, you then feel the need to rise to meet or to box yourself in to meet. I thought it was incredibly deep and a beautiful poem. Thank you.
Thank you, Inka. Thank you.
And what about you, Pam? What did you think?
Yeah, I really like this. I had seen Felon chatting earlier on the contest wall about how she took a different approach. And she certainly did, and which was very cool because I think when you look at a prompt like this and you can look at it in a way that's metaphorical and in a way where the idea of mimicking represents our life. Mimicking expectations, others' voice creating bass within me and the sound quicker than the speed of light. Sometimes it's a difficult thing to live up to other people's expectations, but oftentimes, especially if you're a perfectionist, it's more difficult to live up to your own expectations. And I like casting me amongst shadows, maybe even falling into the abyss. Am I the one who speaks but what I said? No, I'm the words that mimic what I've already bled. You know, your words that you put down, you know, your poetry, the words you speak should always represent it represents oftentimes who you are based on, as Amika was talking about of who you were created to be based on experiences. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. And what about you, Rex?
Let's see. I got to go with that bellowing deep on the opening line is a, especially when you hit the world crashing, is that sort of a eruption, the chaotic thunder vibrating, numbness projecting. There's that that moment where everything kind of phases in and out of itself at the same time. And I like the thought with the fault lines course along my cerebral settling amongst its cortex. There's that that cracking of previous thoughts and the the scatter from friend to foe is the truth coming out in that moment. And the laughter is kind of, I thought that maybe as a touch of manic, but it is on the level of that happiness you do want, but it's something you haven't seen yet. And the next two, that mimicking and the casting me amongst, I thought that those were great thoughts. It isn't so much the mimicking, it's the sound of what you actually wanted, even though you heard it from somebody else. It's something you actually want from deep down and within. And then the finality is what you, what I've already referred to from up top, the crack. And it's all that, the thought that you've already bled from within.
Great interpretation. Close.
Well, I'm on the right track.
Yeah. Everybody's pretty good so far.
Excellent comment, Rick. And what about you, Faith?
I loved the second stanza. Fault lines course along my cerebral settling amongst its cortex, shelter leveled and lays scattered from friend to foe. I feel like the fault lines in your mind are maybe resulting from like almost like a PTSD kind of thing, or like your past experiences or maybe mental illnesses have a blockage that makes your mind go to places where maybe it shouldn't, and it makes it scattered. So sometimes you see friend as foe. This I'm kind of projecting because I feel like that's how I feel about myself sometimes. But I really loved the way that second stanza sat with me.
Thank you.
Ellen, would you like to say a few words about your piece?
Oh, absolutely. Basically, you know, it starts off the bellowing deep from my lungs and stuff is basically, you know, with the profession I do, that's what it's basically saying is, you know, sometimes the world seems like it's crashing around you when it's really not crashing. But yet, going to call, you're sitting in here and it's just so melatonin. The sirens just get old and old. You don't even want to hear them sometimes. And then it goes, you know, it courses through my cerebral settings, you know, of the cortex, basically where everything kind of settles is in the midbrain, and then that shelter lays scattered from friend to foe, and that means, you know, you go from call to call, and, you know, sometimes you're with a good partner, sometimes you have a sucking-ass partner, and I got a good partner right now. So I'm that's where you send out you try to capture laughter in whenever you can on calls, and just, you know, pretty much, and you mimic basically each call, you mimic what the tone is, and you try to change it, but sometimes you just can't, and that's what it goes down to, and, it, you know, no, I'm the words that mimic of what's already bled. I've already seen things usually 2,000 or 3,000 times, so it was nothing new for me, and I know it's pretty much what I was trying to say.
Oh, this is, yeah, great job, Felon. Great write. Thanks for giving
us
a little bit of your thought process behind it, too.
Yeah, I'm fixing to have to go, guys, because we're fixing to have to roll back out. But I just wanted to drop in and at least try to read it.
I'm so glad you were here to read it. Love you, Phil.
Say hey to Charles, my partner. He's right here listening to everything. but thank you, guys, and I'll talk to y'all soon, okay?
Okay. Good night, Phil.
Bye, Phil.
Good night.
All right. And where are we going to next, Pam?
All right. Up next, I'm going to put my poem and give that a read. And this is The Echo of an Empty Vase. It goes like this. Your jewels of language fully on display. You speak a braggart who owns the earth and sky. To the sun, you seem to have a lot to say. Lonely is the offering of sweet goodbyes to a voice you thought to be your very own, a heart that's sinking beneath the weight of lies. Now you are an echo dancing all alone. You caress the empty vase within your arms, pottery that's sown in flights of ash and bone. We try to conquer those silver plate-painted charms, hypnotic swaying that holds a captive life, swallowing the bitter seed of fruit that harms. We dismiss the distant drums and cooing fife, unwanted declarations that speak of strife and poem.
Have I ever told you how much I love when you write in rhyme?
No, but thank you so much.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing to me that so much of you and your voice can be put across in rhyme. I just feel like I always feel like I sound like someone else when I write in rhyme, and it's not true to myself. But I feel like you do stay true to yourself. And you have a lot of wisdom in this piece. There's almost kind of a measured, almost, I don't want to say parable because that's not really the word that I'm thinking, but almost parable-like wisdom to this. Especially in We Try to Conquer Those Silver-Painted Charms, hypnotic swaying holds a captive life, swallowing the bitter seed of truth that harms. I think that stanza especially is one of my favorites. It's just very beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pam. And what did you think, Faith?
Well, you stole exactly what I wanted to say. I do really respect how Pam can make a serious message work so well with rhyme. Because, you know, sometimes the rhyming can kind of feel forced and make it all cutesy, but yours doesn't. Like Mika said, you stay true to the poem, to the tone, to your own style. It doesn't get lost in the structure. It's enhanced by it, the way that you do it. And I also liked the stanza that Mika pointed out. So I don't know, Mika, we're on the same wavelength, because especially the last two lines of that stanza, the hypnotic swaying that holds a captive life, swallowing the bitter seed of fruit that harms. I absolutely loved that stanza.
Thank you.
Yep, great comment, Fabiana. I'm glad that we're on the same wavelength, because we've also been having a hard time, as you were talking about earlier. I don't know, maybe we're just, we've got some kind of mind link going on. And what about you, Rex? What did you think?
Well, it's done differently, but it almost walks the same line as a sonnet, but in 11 syllabic count instead of a 10.
Yeah, it's a turn to rhyme a sonnet.
Oh, okay. I got
that
right.
It's a combination of a sonnet and the, however you pronounce it, Terzerima or Terzerima, I'm not sure.
Well, it kind of hits on that thought of jewels of language fully on display. To the sun, you seem to have a lot to say. Kind of hits on that thought of they're leaving, or the braggart thought runs a bittersweet note maybe in the truth or the offering of that which maybe is something very deep within. Now, you are an echo dancing all alone. The empty vase within your arms, the empty vase kind of has me thinking of well, not just the empty heart, but the empty mind itself. And the distant drums and cooing fife, that kind of hits on the note of walking to your own beat. And the unwanted declaration that speak of strife on the bottom end of that, is kind of maybe ignoring that which comes along, and maybe that which you should have paid attention to in the first place. Otherwise, you wouldn't have that little touch of bitterness that walks through it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rex. Now, Rex, go grab a poem. Snap, snap.
Okay.
He just cracked a whip on you, Rex.
Yeah.
Best behave.
And you too, Mika, because the only one who's put a poem up has been a Faviana.
I know, but okay. Cam, all the poems I've written are like from at least 6 months ago, and they've already been read. I don't have anything new.
Excuses, excuses. What about the one that just made a front page pick? You haven't read that one in a while. But anyways, we'll continue on.
In a while, see? I'll read that one. But okay.
All right, sounds good. But up next we have Sound Streams Play, The Lyrebirds Multiverses by Theo Onick. And Nico, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I absolutely will. sorry, one second. I just spilled wine all over myself, just so you know. Okay. Sound Streams Play, the Lyrebirds Multiverses. Lyrebird, peacock of sound streams, trickle, trick, trickling our world sounds on waves, surfing a sound garden universe, safe and sound aground for you. Out of the wilderness, a shifting pride, showers of feathers spurt out as from the fountains of septic heavens, painting the voice of emotionless tales told, to be given a name and feel, a feel in name, life that couldn't be taken, but for a journey, the sediment of a spin or two in a sensitive sensor, clock ticking, compass indicating, the spot from which to take off and fly the tail around the globe, a story play in multiplied framed multiverses, time's photographs combined and taken away. Lyrebird, peacock of the day of sound streams play, guarding in loud voices living tales, walking on 2 feet, thinking and dancing, working, faint rolling on wheels, turning emotionless, capture into resounding fields. Wanted, emotion photograph contortion and juxtaposed emotions, all wrapped in a luxurious soundscape feel. End poem. And Rex, can you start us off on this one?
Sure. I like the opening. Peacock of sound streams. Trickle, trick, trickling our world sounds on waves, surfing a sound garden universe, safe and sound, a ground for you. I like that thought. It was a nice run of alliteration. The trickle, trick, trickling. That's a nice thought to running water and on waves. To boot that, then surfing. The sound garden was a nice touch to music as well. And what else we got? And showers of feathers spurred out as from fountains of septic heavens, painting the voice of motionless tales told. Septic heavens. Now, there's a little bit of poison in that one. And the sediment. This walks all the way through a water-based theme from the trick trickling to the fountains to sediment. And then the second one, I like the bottom end of the ending, wanted. Emotion photograph contortion and juxtaposed emotions all wrapped in luxurious soundscape feel. But there's a picturesque sort of music fitting the framework of life.
Oh, very cool take, Rex. Excellent comment. And what about you, Faviana? What did you think?
There's some wonderful lines in this. I liked painting the voice of emotionless tales told and the sediment of spin or two in a sensitive sensor. That one had really cool alliteration. And I liked the last line very much, all wrapped in a luxurious soundscape feel. I just loved the diction of this whole poem.
Absolutely, me too. And what about you, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. Faithian and Rex both made wonderful comments. I like her choice of artwork, and I just realized how much the lyrebird looks like something from a Dr. Seuss book, and that is really cool there. But the poem itself, oh my goodness, the sense of sound and movement in here is absolutely captivating. And I really like to be given a name and feel, a feel and name, life that couldn't be taken but for a journey. You know, that whole idea of that life doesn't happen if we stand still, and we don't learn if we don't pay attention. I like also Peacock of the Day of Sound Streams Play, Guardians and Loud Voices, Living Tales, Walking on 2 Feet. There's such a gift to being able to tell a tale and pass it on to the next generation. And this whole Write to Me just comes across as a celebration of life and music and dancing. And it's just beautifully written and very well done.
I really like your comment too, Pam. And part of it, I was kind of going with myself with the part of this, or something in this poem reminds me of like an oral history that's passed down from generation to generation. And there we see kind of the mimicry that she's talking about. But I also, I think she kind of modernized it, especially in the way that she put sound streams. And Soundgarden with those weird underscores. I feel like almost like maybe she's making a point about the age of information and to bring that kind of sense of oral history and translate it into the modern age of information that comes from internet and information being so quick to obtain or to corrupt. Maybe she was making comment on that when she starts talking about clock ticking, compass indicating the spot from which to take off and fly the tail around the globe, almost like a global tale of telephone when it comes to the way news spreads online. A story play in multiplied framed multiverses, so like the same story being framed and also understood in a multiverse way, in a way that each one is it's slightly different. And then time's photographs combined and taken away. I thought that was a really cool line as well. Because time's photographs, you know, a photograph should be almost like hard evidence. But it seems like time's photographs are all available, and yet also their significance is removed because of the ease of access or because of the proliferation of corrupted information or fake news. Like I even subscribe to a site that that posts, you know, historical photographs, and oftentimes people will post that with a completely fabricated backstory, and no one will be the wiser. Everyone will kind of respond like, "Oh, this is really cool," you know. And until you actually do some research, you don't realize that you're being manipulated that way. So I got this sense of the oral history sped up into the modern world and the way that really affects us. All right. Well, Pam, thanks. Where are we going?
Up next is "I'm Tired of Y'all" by WTF Chuck. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yeah, I thought so. "I'm Tired of Y'all" by What the Fuck Chuck.
Ooh.
"Put it all in the spoon. Let's light the candle and lock up the room. Take the day, the hate, the race, the left, the right. Let me cook it to fuel the loving night. Put all this in the spoon. I'll make it taste like home after I fill to y'all's doom. Take your hatefulness to her. Her faith, her unfaithfulness only adds to the orgy muting hurt. Cotton all this harm. Flick loitering bubbles and penetrate the arm. Take this confusion and set it in my spoon. I'll fix up amusement and glow the gloom. All I see is thus fatal friends. The only color is green in the end. And poem.
Good read, Rex.
Good read, Rex.
And Pam, what did you think of this one?
Oh, the great brevity with some nice rhyme and flow. I like that he had a certain line, a couple lines where he put it all in capital to really emphasize, you know, how the emotiveness of those lines. And I like the attitude in this. I thought, well, Rex did an excellent read of it. I'd like take this confusion and set it in my spoon. I'll fix up amusement and glow the gloom. That is just really, really clever phrasing and the whole idea of almost like getting high on other people's hate. Like, you know, almost feeling like this sense of, you know what, I just don't give a shit what any of you think. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And Feziana, what about you?
I definitely see the drug references, but for some reason it reminded me of in Mary Poppins when they sing a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. But it's kind of the opposite. It's like a spoonful of the hate lets the kind of darkness of life be tolerable. It's like it's a defense mechanism, which, I mean, drugs often are. There's an anger in here that is really powerful. And I'll fix up amusement and glow the gloom. I think it's like getting past the darkness by laughing at it. Sometimes you have to laugh at the hard times to get through. And with the green, it's the envy at the end. This is really interesting.
Absolutely. Great comment. I really like that there was this I don't know much about heroin, so I'm not going to try to sound like I know, but I feel like just the way that it was compared and metaphorically put into this like taking heroin. I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know. Okay. I had a comment and then I completely lost it because I got too lost in listening to you guys. I'm sorry. Rex, what about you?
You was on the right track. Yes, this is how you cook up heroin, but he's taking it on a different tack. It had me thinking of that song from Steppenwolf back in the 70s. God damn the pusher man. And he's going to be the pusher man taking all this hate and everything else to cook it down to that base element that he can then offer up as a harpoon that one can actually draw down on and enjoy through their filtered doom. And it hits on that thought. Flick loitering bubbles and penetrate the arm. Take this confusion, set it in my spoon. I'll fix up amusement and blow the gloom. All I see is us fatal friends. The only color is green in the end. So he's going to be the cooker. And what he knows is the only thing at the end of the day is I'm making money on y'all. And you're killing yourselves.
Thank you, Rex. I like the cadence of your comments. And Pam, where are we going next?
All right, so Feziana, your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a refresh, please.
Okay. Flourished and Fell by Feziana. Twin families of tulips grow parallel, 3 feet between each cluster. One flourished, the other fell. Left radiant, right lackluster. So near yet subject to opposing fates. Life is fragile to outside influence. This garden clearly illustrates. We wrangle Gaia at what expense? Sun-kissed left hold their heads high, but right was only thrown shade. Loving rays nourish and fortify. Without warmth, we all fade. End poem.
Dun, dun, dun,
great read of Fabiana. I really like that the way that you observed this in real life and how you responded to it. I guess wrung so much meaning out of it. This reminds me, I don't know if I'm off base here, but this reminds me of the classroom activity that I've read about where the teacher had multiple, all the students try to throw paper balls, crumpled paper, into the waste basket that he set at the very front of the room. And of course, all the kids in the front row can make the basket, but the ones in the back can't. And it's done to illustrate the difference when you're born into privilege and when you're not. And that it really has nothing to do with your ability to aim or how hard you work at it, but about your position in the room. And that's kind of what I got from this. It's not about what's fair necessarily. And that's why you say so near yet subject to opposing fates. The line between you being left to wilt and absolutely blooming and blossoming is very thin, and it's a lot of chance. And
yeah, I was thinking about a similar experiment that I saw a teacher do where they were doing a race, like around a track, but they made students who had two parents who they lived with stepped forward. Students who lived in certain neighborhoods got a step forward. If you were, I can't even remember what the things were, but like they had to step backwards. And then he was like, so is this fair? Are we all going to like have the same chance of getting to the end? It was a way of showing privilege, and it was really interesting the way that he did it. And I was thinking about that when I looked at these flowers, and also like, as humans, we put things in places where they probably aren't meant to grow because we think it's pretty, and this is like how we arrange things. And it's not how it goes. You have to, consider nature at the same time. So on multiple levels, I was really struck by these flowers.
That's beautiful, Fabiana. Thank you. And Pam, what about you?
Well, I have to say, I'm really impressed how inspired you were by that image that you walked by of those flowers, and I really liked hearing your explanation of it, and Mika had a wonderful comment. Now, I thought differently. Obviously, I was wrong, but I couldn't help but think about the idea that, you know, whatever it is we nourish is what grows. I also thought about the time that Mike decided that he had to absolutely get rid of all the dandelions in our yard. And so he sprayed that chemical stuff, and he killed off all the dandelions. But we spent the rest of the summer with these huge brown patches in our grass. And it's kind of like, to me, that whole idea of, just getting what you want, but getting also what you didn't want. Like not thinking about what's anything exact except for what's right in front of you and responding emotionally. And it kind of had on a level that whole idea of when the wolf that you feed is the one that grows the strongest. So just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I like that interpretation.
I think that's a really cool interpretation as well, Pam. Great comment. And what about you, Rex?
Well, I like that literality on this because it does walk on the human angle. But the thought with the two families of tulips, you can plant tulips both in sun and shade, but the ground may differ in itself. You might have the fact that where the shade is, it doesn't have enough drainage or it has too much drainage. There's not enough nutrients in the soil or it's too acid-based or anything, a number combination, of course, to go along with it. So it all boils down to what you plant and what you try to grow. You've got to make sure the ground in both arenas walk the same. Not that because of the shade, you might have a tree that's growing there that's sucking up more of the moisture than you want. So you have to actually apply a little better of a medium, maybe an enhancer to go along with the slow feed of those plants in the shade.
Uh-oh, Faviana, you got Rex talking about gardening.
It's dangerous to get him started.
Great comment, Rex. I like your gardening comments, Rex.
He is very knowledgeable.
All right. Where are we going next, Pam?
All right. Well, up next is your right, so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. This is particularly, like, apt for right now because I literally spilled wine all over myself in my bed. So, okay. I know. Oh, right after the night that I said, oh, I'm off tonight, I just, like, dumped over my glass for no reason. So, okay, marooned. Truth is, wine is like open arms, a grave you willingly fall in. Lusty, church-going nympho, soft as any sin, marooned me in blood spill, this dripping canvas. The ribbon that bloomed, a red flower moon, medicine I own, her dark sweat in my throat, my tears on her neck, each swallow too hungry. That breath I never take at the surface. I'm calm.
Great read there, Mika. And Faviana, your thoughts?
I really love the line, a grave you willingly fall in. You know, this is a really great poem. It has so much to it. It's not very long, but I feel a lot in it. I think this is really awesome, and I can see why I got a front page pick. I want to read it a couple times and make sure I'm fully absorbing it, but I love it at first read.
Thanks, Faith.
Absolutely. And Rex, your thoughts?
One is like open arms, a grave you willingly fall in. There's a kind of maybe a thought to indulgence. Maroon me in blood spill. That kind of had me thinking of the conversion from child to womanhood, this dripping canvas, the unsurety of it, red flower moon, medicine I own, her dark sweat in my throat. There's a thought in that to the red flower moon, blossom, medicine I own, maybe punishment, the dark sweat in your throat, tears in the neck, each swallow too hungry. Oh, there's a thought. That's going right back to the lusty church-going nympho there. And that breath I never take at the service is one you don't want to take because you might drown in the moment.
Oh, what a beautiful interpretation, Max. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I think
I
you gave me
to
a little too much credit for how deep I was going to be.
Rex,
hey, I'm always
the
off
best.
The cuff on comments.
In a great way, though.
I have to say, Mika, have I ever told you how beautiful you are when you dish dirt about yourself?
Thank you.
Yeah, this is just wonderfully raw and honest. I really particularly like lusty church-going nympho, soft as any sin. The way it just goes down so easy. And I thought lusty church-going nympho was perfect for the idea of those aspects of yourself that you feel like you need to keep secret because of fear of judgment. I also like the personification of the wine, her dark sweat in my throat, my tears on her neck, each swallow too hungry. Emotions are very difficult to express, and sometimes it's difficult to find that shoulder to lean on, and we end up leaning on the wrong ones, but just a beautiful, raw, right, and I'm so glad it got a front page pick, and you brought it here to be read for us, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Pam.
And Rex, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a read for us.
Okay. I left you nobbling on the first one, so I'm going to leave you gnarbling on this one. It's called Gogwalls. A goggly snog goes snoggly gog. Tyranny geese that me forced intrude, treading not light in Prando's or drucks. Gogwalt screams the loss of our brood, where wolvice shall noggle on their clucks. Split this blade, open up blowguns, and growl these viny shaggers. Grimsy growls from a one-eyed shogun, scalping shatrap catcher baggers. In swan glow twilight they all hang boot, some are spitted for their clear play. Valgoons and crowls flock at a hoot, music to your bums oot when day. Gather round, for tonight we feast. Our wolvines have stripped tongues and flesh. Glub glubs drink Sarah of the beast, and you wing ones shall have sweet fresh. Dine long and waste not, me forced friends. Battle lines be drawn, we must be strong. For morrow Goggle now depends, and all against this glower throng. Come, come, all ye ranny shaggers, for ye shall taste me sharp old crails. This blade be filled with corpse for negars, as blood be spilt on holy veils. Ye beware who step in me forced intrude, for ye shall leave this earth beshaken. I'll novel your bones and shat ye rude, as now this goggly snog is waken. And bump.
Wow. Okay, I gotta read through the breakdown to understanding. This reminded me of trying to read, what is it called, that you had to read in high school?
Jabberwock.
Beowulf. Yeah, the Jabberwocky 2. Or the other one is Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That there's almost like a different language involved, and it takes, just inferring from context what's being said. I think that's really cool. Is this language that you, like these words, things that you've made up, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is all me playing.
Nerd. Just kidding. Okay. Beyond how cool it is that you've written it in your own sort of language, but that still, I think all of the words as I'm reading through them have connotations. Like if you read them, they would have connotations towards the meanings that you've put, especially like Volgoons and Swamglow. You do have a habit too, even in your poems, where you don't branch so far out into writing it in your own sort of language. You have a habit of creating words that make complete sense in the context of the poem. And I think it's definitely a talent of yours. It's hard for me to comment on the meaning of the poem though, because on first read, I just, I kind of let the sound wash over me, and I'm still struggling with the meaning. And what did you think of it, Afasiana?
I think that it's a little bit too late for me to understand a poem that has this kind of creative vocabulary. So I need to read it a little bit earlier in the day, but I want to get back to it because I love the creativity that Rex has with making up words and combining words and taking words from other languages. I'm a bit of a word nerd, so I love that you're doing this, but I feel like I need more time to study it at a time where I have a clearer mind. So it's hard for me to comment either, but it's really intriguing.
Wow, thank you, Favy.
Thanks, Apisiana. And what about you, Pam?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. I'm glad you wrote, not necessarily part two, but as you said, an offshoot of your first Gogli Saad, right?
This is a little backdrop.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. I like that. And as always, wonderful play with words. You have this way of capturing the essence of Lewis Carroll, but with your own tone. And I can't believe you wrote this 20 days ago and I missed it. But there's such a wonderful sense of adventure within this rite. And, the lessons learned about those things that sneak around. And, just very clever, very creative. And I look forward, of course, because I'm going to assume that you will be writing more, so I'm looking forward to future writes.
Well, thank you.
Why, thank you,
Rachel. Thank you.
I've forgotten all about
this. All right, you guys.
What's that?
This was...
I've forgotten about this one.
Oh, yes. You mean your other write that you did you forgot about?
No, I forgot about this one.
Oh,
and it's only
okay.
3 weeks old.
yeah, 20 days old. Did you write it for that one contest and then missed the contest? Or?
Yeah, I wrote it for a contest, and I actually missed out on what he wanted to begin with. It wasn't. It was something else. I jumped at it and didn't read deep enough.
That happened. Yeah. But all right. Well, Mika, do you want to end the show, or do you have time for my write? It's up to you.
Let's read your write, Pam. I want to read your write.
Okie dokie, Smokey. It's a fairly short one, anyways. All right. And this is a shrapnel wingspan of redemption, and it goes like this. I'm singing those patriotic blues into an unsympathetic bottle of tequila. A shrapnel wingspan lights up like 4th of July on the edge of a night. Bullshit metaphors and urban lore, walking a matchstick girl's bitter irony of redemption. Sometimes I peek inside the wound to touch the soft underbelly of bushfires, an iron wreath of forget-me-nots, hobnobbing in the sanctity of self. End poem.
That was a great read, Pam. Also, holy shit. I don't know. I fucking love the way that you write on walking a matchstick girl's bitter irony of redemption. There's like no necessarily win in that. I've lost my headphones. This is on speaker, but I love that there's such a sardonic edge to it. It's almost like especially when you bring in patriotic blues and the 4th of July on the edge of a knife. It's almost like this should be something to be celebrated by you, a liberation of yourself, but. Instead, it has this underbelly of bushfires. It has an iron wreath of forget-me-nots. It has the haunted air of something that's just not quite right. Redemption shouldn't have a bitter irony, but here it is, and it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. It's really a well-done poem.
Thank you.
And what did you think, Faith? Oh, I think Faze might have had to go. And Rex, what about you?
Well, nothing good ever comes from drinking blues and an unsympathetic bottle of tequila. Because what comes out in the shrapnel wingspan does light up like the 4th of July fireworks, and the edge of the knife might just be what's in the other hand held. The matchstick girl's bit of irony of redemption is, yeah, I'm going to light this world and see what the fuck happens. And hobnobbing. An iron wreath of forget-me-nots. Or like, there's that that bane that weighs one down. They may have smelled sweet, but if they're iron, it's dead weight.
Absolutely. Thank you to both of you. Wonderful comments.
Thank you for that.
All right,
great
guys.
Show tonight.
Well, it was a beautiful show. Thank you for being here, Pam. Thank you for your help for co-hosting with me. And Rex, thank you for being here. I really miss you, and I love your comments and your reads. And Faziana, thank you so much for being here to read and comment as well. And to Kenneth, thank you for calling in and reading your piece. And to Marcus, I thank you for being here as well. And to Felon for calling in, even though you were driving an ambulance at the time. We really appreciated you being here to read your piece as well. Love all you guys. Thank you so much.
I should have asked her for a quick siren burst.
We really should have. Good night, you guys.
Good night.